You're listening to the Free to Be Mindful podcast, which invites you along on a journey to learn of mindful living, grow in mental health, and inspire through personal growth. In a world where we can often feel much stress and overwhelm, this podcast provides bite-sized tips and real talk conversations, empowering you to embrace mindfulness and nurture your full potential. I'm your host, Vanessa De Jesus Guzman, educator, licensed professional counselor, entrepreneur, and mom. I'm passionate about helping others live life with peace of mind and ease of heart without losing their, well, you know. Here we go. Hello and welcome to episode 196 of the Free to Be Mindful podcast. I hope that you're feeling good, looking good, and doing better in this world than you were yesterday. So today we are kicking off our Mental Health Awareness Month series on the podcast. Now, May is known as Mental Health Awareness, and we are going to delve deep into diverse expertise of therapists and of mental health professionals. I can't wait for you to get to know each one of these professionals on a deeper level and just find out a little bit more about the therapeutic world, because it's not all about sitting and talking. There's a lot more to it. Today, I am proud to have and welcome my friend and business partner, Kathy Acosta, who's an LCSW and an EMDR certified therapist. She's a proud first generation Latina mom, and she's a very enthusiastic owner of Hero Counseling located in Ridgewood, New Jersey. She's all about breaking barriers and building bridges, and she's truly on a mission to blend passion with purpose in everything she does. She's also a private practice business coach, and she is good at it. She specializes in coaching private practice owners who are ready to take the leap and expand into group practice, because that in and of itself is a lot. And she is the CEO and the founder of Latinx Practice Collective, which I also help lead with her, along with our business partner, Jasmine. The mission of the Latinx Practice Collective is to create a space that's as vibrant as our Latinx culture through community, support, and business consultations to help private practice owners. I can't wait for you to hear all of the things that she is about to share, not only about her journey to become a therapist, but also her certification and all that she's about. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Here we go. Kathy, welcome. Welcome to the Free to Be Mindful podcast. I'm so happy that you're with us today.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yay. So I have the pleasure of knowing you personally, and I really want to share you with the world because you do some amazing, amazing things. So please tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and you know, all the things.
All right. So I am born and raised in New Jersey, to parents who came to this country very early age. My mom is from Honduras and my dad's from El Salvador. So I'm a first gen. I am a mom. I'm a new mom to our son that we just adopted officially last February, but he's been with us since he was 7 months, and now he's almost 2.5 years old.
He's the cutest.
Yes. My husband and I actually got married a year early so that we could adopt him. But we had our wedding actually this past September. So it was nice that we got to celebrate with our whole family. He has a very big family, my family and friends there. So it was really great. And what else can I share about myself? I am a middle child. Ooh. I'm not your traditional middle child. I am middle child, the oldest female in a Latina home. So that's a little bit different, as we all know.
Yeah.
And I have an older brother. He's about 8 years older than me, and I have a younger sister, and we're really close. So that's a little bit about me.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for sharing light and sharing that you're a mom to an adopted son. We don't hear that all the time. And there's so many more out there. So that's awesome that you put that out there, and you just have the cutest family. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
You are, fit a lot of the first gen roles, as I do as well. And that really brings us to like an interesting journey, especially when we want to check off all the boxes, do all the things as we're supposed to, quote unquote. But then here we are as business owners. So share with us a little bit as to like what you went to school for and then what you did and how it was that you became a successful group practice owner.
Yeah, so that journey was a little bit different for me. I took my time in school. I actually started, and I don't even know if you know this about me, Vanessa. I started off as a business major. And I
Oh,
went to
makes
the
sense now.
classes. Yes, it makes sense now. I went to the classes and I was like, this is really boring. I was like, I don't want to do this. And then I was taking a couple other courses trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I actually started off in community college for a couple of reasons. I didn't know my major. I did get into a school in Florida, which half of my other family, most of my family actually at that time lived there. So my grandma was there, my tios, my tias, like there were a lot of people there. But then when it came down to it, I would have had to leave and be away from my mom and being a first gen and being the one that, I say my first jobs were translator, application person, all of that. So it was really hard for me during that time to leave. So I decided to stay. My mom was very happy. So I went to community college trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I took those business courses, didn't love them. And then I took a psychology course. It was Psychology of Women, it was called. And it was a male professor teaching it. So I was like, all right, let me see what this is all about. And I find myself participating, really like just interested. I had to do this presentation and it felt so easy to me. So I switched my major, right? So at the time, though, nobody told me that I should do social work to have that easier track. So I switched it to psychology. So So we know that whole complicated thing. And again, I think looking back, it's because I didn't have anybody else in my family to that went to college. I was the first one. I think thinking back, because I did eventually go to a 4-year, I went to Ramapo College in New Jersey, and I transferred into that school, but I also felt like very disconnected. I decided to live at school because they said, I really want to get integrated in this experience because I think it would have been very different had I started from a 4-year college right away. But also it was a financial thing. I didn't want to have all these loans. And again, my mom, even like FAFSA, figuring that out, we were like, what
What's
is
that?
this? And what information do you need? And all of that. So it was a lot. And that's the route that I took. So when I transferred to Ramapo College, I was actually a psychology major with a minor in, at that point, they had a minor in substance abuse, like if I wanted to do my LCADC, because at that time I thought that that's what I wanted to do. So I went into Ramapo College. I graduated from there. So it took me a little bit longer because I had switched and credits and all of that. So I ended in about 5.5 years is when I, after graduating from high school, is when I completed my degree there. And then I actually got into Fordham, and that's where I went for my master's. So it was like huge. It's like from community college to Ramapo to Fordham. It was such a big deal for me and for my family and all of that. And again, even with that, navigating that process of applying for grad school and can I get any, scholarships? Can I get loans? What it was. So that was a whole process to navigate. And because I didn't do social work for my undergrad, it was a longer process for me when I was getting my master's. So my master's took 3 years. So that was 3 years of commuting back and forth into the city. And I had a concentration in law because originally, when I went to Fordham, I thought about doing their MSW JD program. And I actually started, you're learning so much about me. I started there, that program, the combined program. And then I decided that that's just not what I wanted to do. I didn't want to pursue my JD. So I stuck with my MSW and I completed my degree in 3 years. But while I was there, I actually, right after moving into the dorm rooms for Ramapo, I actually never went back home. So I moved out on my own from there.
Good for
And I
you.
think, yeah, it was good for me, but very hard, right? I was
Hard.
like 20 years old living on my own. And I think back on it now, and I've actually had long conversations with my mom about it. I think I did that because there was a lot of pressure at home. So I don't think it was a conscious decision when I did that and didn't move back home. I think it was more so I really need to focus on school and doing all of these things for myself. So I didn't move back home. And it was very disappointing for my mom, but we've definitely had conversations about it now to understand why I did not go back home.
Yeah, I'm glad you were able to connect the dots now and that it worked out. You know, you knew what you were doing and why you did that.
Yeah, definitely. And while I was in my master's program, because it's a just longer route with all of these things, I actually worked at a tutoring company, and it started as a side thing just because I, it was good money doing tutoring, all of these things. But then I got really involved with the company, and that's where I learned a lot of my business knowledge and that foundation, because he was actually in the starting phases when I joined the company. I think he was like year two or three. And when I started helping with operations and business, and we learned together payroll, HR, all of these things, which all of those things obviously now transfer to my
Such valuable
business.
skills.
Yes, like QuickBooks, things like that. I had to kind of like dive deep and learn, and I went on, did videos, asked people, all of that stuff, so I could figure it out for the business that I was essentially helping him grow. He grew to be pretty big, had two tutoring centers at that point, and a lot of tutors that worked for him. So I really gained a lot of my business knowledge there while I was getting my master's. And I enjoyed it so much that I actually stayed for quite some time
And
after. So
after.
what I did was I worked for him full time, building that business, and then I actually was getting my clinical hours part-time. So it took about 3 years, again, a little longer route. Now that I'm talking, I feel like longer routes for things, but I got there eventually. So it took about 3 years for me to get 3.5 years to get my clinical hours. And then we all know how long it takes to get your license.
Let me pause you right there
I
because
know.
people out there
Yes.
don't know how long it takes to get
This
the
is true. This
license.
is true.
And before that, I want to like bring together the themes that I'm listening to as far as, and I think it goes along with the first gen journey because we don't have a manual, right? Our parents didn't go to college. They don't know how to help us navigate. Again, they don't even know what FAFSA is. But the common theme that I see is just a lot of figuring it out and how easy it would have been to been like, well, I don't get this. I'm just going to get a job. You know, or I don't know how to do this, or where can I turn for help? And that's something that on the journey that we particularly take as first gen people, we really go down that route a lot. Like it has to be figure outable because we want it to work. And sometimes, unfortunately, it does take a little bit longer. So you figured out going to college, you figured out getting your master's, being on your own. But now this licensing part, and you're the first person that is kicking off our mental health series. And I've talked about my own journey before, but I really want to bring to light to it because sometimes people, you know, you look at doctors and like, yes, and to be respected, like they spend, you know, years and years and years and years. And not that it's the same, but we also spend years and years and
Oh,
years
yeah.
and years. So people, we have 4 years of undergrad, and this is generally speaking, sometimes it takes a little bit longer. 3 years of master's, generally speaking, and then we need to get hours. And each branches has their own rules. So as a licensed professional counselor, my journey was 4,800 hours, and then you were able to get your full licensure. But then there's testing in between, and you have to wait for the state and things like that. How about for social workers?
All right. So with social work hours, it's a little bit different because I know for you, for mental health counseling, your internship hours also count, right?
Some of them do.
Yes. So up to a certain amount you can count. So we have it's separate. We have our hours for internship that we have to do. And typically, most programs you have to do at least two internships. So for me, my first year was all classes. My second year was an internship. And then my third year was another internship. Those hours are separate. They don't count. You do those hours, then you have to take a test. So we have to take two tests. I think you only have to take
Yes,
one,
we
right?
just have one. Yes.
Yes. So before you even start your journey, so now you're like, yay, I got my master's, did my internship hours, got some great experience. Before you can start doing any of your clinical hours towards full licensure, you have to pass a test. Now, this test, hopefully you pass your first time, maybe you don't. And then until you pass that test, you can't start your clinical hours. So you would get what's called your LSW, you get your number. But again, there's waiting. It's not you take the test and they're like, here you go. You're
Immediately. It doesn't
no.
work that way.
No. You have to then submit your application and say, I passed my test. Now give me my hours. So imagine you trying to get a job after you have your master's. You're like, I have my master's. I am a graduate, and I
Right.
have this degree. No. You have to schedule to take your test. You have to pass that test. After you pass the test, you have to wait for your license number. Once you have your license number, then, right? So you're just hoping that you get a job pretty quickly or that a job will hire you once you say that you have passed your test,
Hoping
right?
that the number comes in quickly.
Yes.
Okay.
So you do all of that, you have to take another test.
Wow.
So we take another one that's considered our clinical test. When you take your clinical test, then again, another application and more waiting to get your actual license number so you can be considered an LCSW.
And
And
that's where you
for,
can practice clinically, licensed clinical
yes,
social worker.
licensed clinical social independently, you don't need a supervisor. Now you can open up your practice.
And every state, just for all the listeners out there, because we have national and international listeners, every state has their own rules. These are specific for New Jersey, correct?
Yes, this is
Okay.
specific for New Jersey. And that's what makes it hard. You can't just go and say, oh, now I'm going to apply to get my license in California, for example,
You
right?
have to go through
There's
the process again.
a whole process that, and also different requirements. And I believe California is one of those states that actually has a different test,
Wow.
right? So
Whole
you would
different
have to
test.
hold different test. I know someone right now who's trying to get license in Florida. And she actually has to take extra courses.
Wow. So this is what I mean, people. Mental health clinicians, and we can be psychologists, social workers, counselors, and then we all have certifications thereafter. This is again for the masters, and the hours varies by state. It takes a long time, which is when we talk about like, well, why does it cost so much, when you go out of insurance, out of network? This is part of the reason, because it's a lot of education, a lot of experience. It's not just 4 years and we're done. So that was your story of your hours. And then you were still working at the tutoring company, getting your hours. And then when you fully got your license, what was your journey from there?
So when I fully got my license, I could have opened my practice then. And that was my goal and my dream, right? I was like, I'm running operations and doing this for another business, right? And while I was very much enjoying it, it wasn't my business, right? And I think the scary part was I have salary, I have benefits, I have all of these things that my mom was like, that's what you need. You need to
That's what
go
you
and
go
get your,
for.
yes, right? Because my mom, she worked a job for many years that had no benefits at all, right? So she, came to this country, and I just think about like all the things that she did too. I'm like, she came to this country, she didn't know English, she, had the education she had from her country, and then she went took classes, learned English, and actually went to cosmetology school. This is
Wow.
why I know how to do my hair because of my mama.
Lovely.
And this is why my nails are always done because of her. And I was the one that she experimented on,
Of
perms,
course.
highlights, all the stuff. But she did that for many years. I mean, when she was pregnant with me, when she was working at this salon that she worked at for many, many years, like we're still friendly with them. But she worked that job, and one of the biggest things that she'd say to me is pay time off, a salary, and benefits, right? It
All the
was kind of
security stuff.
drills. All the things that she didn't have for a long time. When we were older, she did switch jobs, and she got those. She worked for a hospital, and she got benefits. She got all of those things, but again, at a lower pay because she didn't have the degree that other people at the hospital had. But she was also happy because she got off at 4 and was able to be home with us and got to go to all of my games. So I played softball for many years and I did cheerleading. So she got to do all of those things and see those things. So that's one of the things I always appreciate about my mom because she actually had a chance to work at Univision and she
Wow.
turned it down
Because she
because
wouldn't be
she's,
home.
yeah, because she wouldn't be home till 6:30 or 7. And she said that's not something she could do. So yeah, it's tough to let go of those things that your whole entire life you were
You've been drilled
told
into. Yeah.
you should have, right? And I was getting paid well. And honestly, what's really a shame in this field is that I was getting paid more there than I would have if I would have gotten a full-time job, clinically,
Wow.
fully licensed.
Regardless of all of, again, the education, the hours, the certifications, regardless of all of that, which is something that I feel, as a society, global society, we really need to relook at the way that we consider mental health, because everybody needs it. It's part of your overall health, and here we are not compensating clinicians, as they should be.
Yeah, exactly. So, going back to your original question of when did I open up my own practice, I was it took me a little while to let go of that security. So, it was about almost 3 years after, no, my almost 4 years after I was fully licensed that I actually said, "No, I'm doing this. I'm not going to keep working for someone else and building up someone else's business when I can do this for myself." So, in 2020, you know where this is going because it was in 2020. In 2020, I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to open up my own practice. I'm doing that. And that is the year that I did that. Interesting story that I don't even know if you know this full story is that originally I was going to do it with someone else. So I had a partner that I was going to go into business with. And again, I think that a lot of that was fear-based too. Like, I didn't want to do this alone. You know, having someone to, I remember I was used to working within a team that I was helping to manage and lead. And I had a essentially someone else that was the CEO of the company that I was doing everything with. So it felt very scary to do my own practice and branch out in that way. So that's originally how I was going to start it. But because it was the pandemic, situations and circumstances changed for this person, and she couldn't continue doing it with me. So I said, okay,
Solo.
I'm doing this. I'm doing this solo. And I always started as a group practice because to me, that just felt like that's what I want anyway. So I'm going to go in that direction. So I started my group practice in February of 2020.
What a time.
Yes. And then, you know, we all know what happened in March of 2020. Yeah.
But the mental health need skyrocketed
Yes.
after we were figuring out what was happening during that time. And then I'm sure it was a boost to the practice.
Yes. Yeah. So originally, obviously, I was like, what did I do? I'm like, it's a month in and the world is shutting down. And then everything happened with virtual and all of the changes there. So it was really by June, July, I was so busy. There was phone calls every single day. I actually ended up hiring another clinician that summer because I was so busy.
Oh my goodness. And then owning your own practice and now being in charge of other people's pay, which is always like a big weight. You know, I see it as something really huge. But then on top of that, you yourself are continuing your own education and your own certification. And I know you're certified in EMDR. If you don't mind
Yes.
describing what that is and what it does that it helps for people.
All right. So EMDR, this is an interesting story with EMDR as well. I feel like now all my stories, I'm recognizing a theme of very, very long. But so originally, when I was getting my clinical hours, when I first started, this is back in, I graduated in 2011. So in 2012, I got my first job working for a very small nonprofit, a domestic violence shelter. And they actually sent me to do EMDR training, right? So this is in 2012. So I've had the training for EMDR for quite some time, but as nonprofit world goes, they paid me for the training, but they
Didn't use it.
actually, no, I didn't use it. They were like, yeah, I don't think we're gonna do that. I'm not sure. And EMDR is very intense and, you know, we need some supports in place and they just weren't able to do that. So I actually did the training again during, you know, our downtime in 2020. So in 2020, I went and I did the training all over again. So happy that I did it because, you know, that was in 8 years after so many things had changed. And I did the training again. Very, very long process to get certified for EMDR, right? So EMDR, I'll tell you a little bit about what it is, but first I'll tell you kind of how you get certified. So
Awesome.
the way that you do it is you take this training. And the training is typically like these 3 really long days, 1 month and 3 really long days. The next month, you're exhausted after it. And you also get to practice on another therapist and they practice on you,
So you're
right? So you
going
get to,
through it.
you get to experience. So the exhaustion comes from you just process some stuff during your training. So you do that. And then with the training comes 10 group consultation calls, which you're doing as you're working with your clients so that you're getting the support you need because you just started doing EMDR. Right. A lot of people stop there, right? And they're like, okay, I'm EMDR trained,
But
right?
not certified.
Yes, exactly. So that's the difference. So if you want to get certified, you need to do an additional 20 hours of consultation and X amount of clients that you're seeing. And 12 credits in continuing education with EMDR, and 2 letters of recommendations from the consultants that you met with, and two letters, professional recommendations. It's a
No more
huge
ands.
checklist.
That's amazing. That's a lot of stuff.
Yes. So you have to do all of these things once you're done. So it took me about 2.5 years to complete all of those things after. And then you wait. There's more waiting for them to approve and make sure that you have everything. I was missing a piece. I feel like this isn't certification or licensing if you're not missing a piece. So I got that piece, sent it over to them, and then at the end of last year, I was officially EMDR certified.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a long one.
And how does this help the clients that you see?
So going back to what EMDR is, it's all about bilateral stimulation, right? So it's a theory that if we have this bilateral stimulation, we can process things a little bit differently. It's a lot more complicated than that, but I encourage people to really look into it and see what's out there, because EMDR is really, really helpful, and there's a lot of different ways to do it. So there are, typically it was said that this is for like trauma. This is for people who have like endured this like severe trauma, and there's no other way for them to process it. Now we know there's a lot of other reasons you can use EMDR, phobias, fears, all things like that. But it's the theory is the bilateral stimulation helps you process memories in a very different way. If you want to put it down to like a sentence, it's almost like a rewiring, right? So our memories incidents can be very emotionally charged, with which kind of blocks the us being able to think about something in a logical sense, right? Think about triggers, right? We talk about triggers with our clients all the time, right? So these memories are so emotionally charged that they can trigger you and send you back to where you were and that time and how you felt, right? So EMDR is the emotional charge. We're trying to remove that, right? And think about this memory in a different way. It's truly amazing. Like, if I didn't experience it myself when I was doing training, I don't know if I would have believed that this actually worked. So it's like that kind of intervention.
So I can see how it can be really used well with clients who are experiencing trauma, who have had something so big happen in their lives, kind of black it out, and now trying to go back there to rewire their brain, so to speak.
Yeah, it takes out all of that. When I think about this is what I think about. And we do a lot of work around negative belief. What is the negative belief that you have focused around that incident? But usually our negative beliefs, they didn't start there. That incident might have just reinforced that negative belief for us, right? So kind of float back to think about, when did this negative belief start?
And then hopefully again, like reset the mindset to think about things differently once you've gone through it. This is so interesting for me because I don't have this background or training in EMDR. Sounds so very interesting, but I don't think I can go through another certification process. So I just refer out for people who I think that would benefit. But that is amazing. And all of these extra certifications that we receive and these areas of specialization really make you stand out as who you are as a not only as a group practice owner, but just as even a standalone clinician, because you have these specializations that help very specific areas of niche, if we break it down like that.
Yeah, definitely. And that's actually what prompted me, right? I said, I'm going to private practice. I said, I know the population that I like to work in. So what do I want to get certified in, or what training do I want so that I can really serve who I want to serve better, right? So me going into private practice in 2020, I decided to do the training again and go through the entire process, because I already knew how powerful EMDR was from the training I did in 2012. And I really wanted to dig deeper so I can have this as an extra tool to work with my clients.
Amazing, amazing. So while doing all that and growing your group practice to numerous clinicians, then you decided to be like, well, how about another business on the side? Talk to us a little bit about how that came to be, because I know it wasn't that simple.
Yeah, definitely wasn't that simple. So it was a really natural process how it happened. I didn't plan out to say I'm going to have this business and then another business. How it happened is, a year in, or maybe a year and a half in, I said, I'm really lonely. Again, going back to why I wanted a partner in the business, I said, I'm really lonely, and I feel like I just want to connect, but specifically connect with my community, right? I wanted to be in community with other private practice owners, because I know we have a very unique set of skills, barriers, difficulties, all of those, right? It's very nuanced, I feel like, to first gens, to Latinos, because there are things that maybe we have been trained to believe about
Right.
what we can or cannot do. And I feel like that gets a in the way sometimes of us being business owners and the decisions that we make. So,
Yes.
very intentionally, I said, I want to connect to other business owners and create a group. So this was in, oh my gosh, Vanessa, when was this?
I
Because
don't
you were
remember.
part of a
It's been
group.
so long.
You were part of the group
I
2.5 years
think maybe
ago.
2021 or so.
I think so. I
22.
think so. Maybe the I think I started it in 2021 and the group started in 2022. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So in 2022, started this group. It started with I think at that point it was like eight of us. I started with just reaching out to a couple people that I knew that were in private practice or own their own private practice, and we've started forming this group, started meeting once a week, and the group just getting bigger and bigger and
Yes.
bigger. And there was this need, you know, even how we were connected was through that group, you know, someone else
Yes.
saying, she has
Yeah.
this group, you should join.
For the same reason, because I was so lonely. And it was January 1st, 2022 that I left education full time. And I said, oh my goodness, this is fantastic. But now I went from working in a school of with 80 colleagues to working by myself alongside my therapy dog, which is not the same. So finding you and then being a part of this group really led to so much, not only in my professional growth, but also personally, seeing how I was, being transformed as a business owner.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's exactly why I said, you know, I feel like other people want this. I'm like, if I want this, I can't be alone in this. And then I found out that all these other people wanted this. And by the end of 2022, the group was 11 people that I actually formed a second group. And more people were reaching out asking if they could be a part of this group. And hearing everyone's story was so wonderful. It was like, I was in education and now I have my own practice, or I worked at a hospital and now I want my own practice, but I'm really scared to do it. And, or I'm doing this part time and I want to go to full time and all of that. So we had this wonderful, group of people. It was at this point, what, like 22 of us and two separate groups. I brought us all together in the beginning of 2023. That was so wonderful. And while this was happening, a lot of people were asking me, hey, Kathy, do you do coaching? Do you do
Right.
consultations? I want to learn more from you. You know, you have a group practice, you're doing this. How do you do it? So really, I started thinking, I'm like, my business experience is what helped me to build this. I was kind of like,
Absolutely.
I didn't even think about it. I said, okay, doing this, doing this, doing that. And it made me realize like how lucky I was to have had that experience and to bring that into my practice. So I started doing coaching and consultations for people who are starting their practice or people who are growing their practice. So that's how my second business was born. And I'm doing that now. I love it. And like everything else, I actually just started niching down to work with people who are going from solo to group
The group.
practice. Because that's really my thing. I
Yeah.
really, really love my group practice. This summer, I'm going to hire clinician number eight. And I'm really excited about it and I love it. So those are the things that I'm going to focus on when it comes to coaching. And then the third business came about because there was such a big need, right? Our group
Yeah.
was growing. And what was hard is we were trying to share resources. We're trying to talk to each other. We were sending each other referrals. And it was growing so much that I wanted a way to formalize everything.
Right.
So I said, I want to do this, but I don't want to do it alone. So
Not another
that's
thing by
no,
yourself.
not another thing by myself. And also, I think I'm very realistic with what are my strengths and what are areas of growth. I don't like to call them weaknesses, but where are those areas for me? And this was a very different type of business, right? Like I knew the business part of a group practice, I knew the clinical work, got that all down. When it came to the coaching, I said, I'm doing this, I love doing this, got that down. But when it came to the Latinx Practice Collective, which is what the groups formed into, that was just different for me. I said, you know, I'm reaching different clients. We want this to grow into something else. And I wanted to have, at that point, I said, I didn't know if it was like almost like advisors or partners in the business, but I knew I wanted something. And that's when I reached out to you and to Jasmine and asked, would you? I think it was started off as like a meeting. We met,
Yeah, just chatting about it.
and kind of like dreamed about what it could be. And then after that, quickly we decided, let's do this into like a full partnership and let's grow the business. And then my third business was born.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. And we're almost getting to a year of when the business was formalized, even though it had been running prior to looking a little bit different. And I already love the way that we're impacting other private practice owners, whether they be solo or group, the way that we bring our culture into the conversations, because as you said, it does make such a big impact. And also how we continue to learn and grow even by helping and leading all of these clinicians. So I can't wait to see what it turns into.
No, I'm super, super excited. Like you said, it's already grown. We have new members and our groups are in full swing, and it's so wonderful to hear the feedback. And we know like people are asking for this. They want to know how to grow their practice, how to have seamless operations so that if they want to, they can go and venture out into doing something else. And I know that's what we hear often from a lot of our members, that they are hoping to, do speaking engagements or have another business. And they can do that if their operation is running smooth and they don't have to worry about their practice.
Absolutely. And that's really where I want to bring it back into mindful living, which is what the Free to Be Mindful podcast is all about. We really talk about not only mental health, but mindful living and personal growth and listening to your story, because all of our stories have magic within them that really start with hopefully self-awareness, knowing, as you said, what are our strengths, what are our areas of growth and opportunity. How can we implement that in our lives? And it sounds like even from when you were going to community college and not yet in the mental health field, but you knew exactly where your strengths lied and how to navigate those. Of course, trial and error and many, many, many years and making things long. But you got here. And now not only are you continuing to help yourself and your family, but now expanding, helping clinicians under your group practice and now through the Latinx Practice Collective. And that is really an amazing way to bring it together, not only your self-awareness, social awareness, what's needed out there, and how you can continue to make a positive impact on others, which not everybody gets to do in this lifetime. So you've achieved a lot, and we have a whole nother second, third lifetime to go.
Yes, I am. I'm really excited about how things have happened, and even the longer path gets you eventually to where you want to be. I thought about that a lot when I was younger, like, what do I want to do? And even when I took that class at community college, I didn't know where it would lead me, but I felt that passion, knowing that like this will go somewhere. Not sure where yet. And then years and years later, here I am. And even, when I took the job at for the tutoring company, I had no idea where that would lead me. No idea. At first, it was just I need extra income and something that's flexible, right? And then I gained all this knowledge that now I can bring to my practice and to the people that we work with, and that feels like purpose, like I'm combining the things that I'm really passionate about with purpose, and then also at the t same time, not just helping my clients, but also helping other private practice owners so they can live the life that they want to live, which is what we hear so much. And it makes me so happy to hear when someone says, like, now I have more time for this, or this is figured out. I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yes. And for our listeners, I want you to understand that sometimes we don't have the answers, right? Like in hindsight, we have this wonderful story, but as we're going through it, like we're going through it. And it can certainly be a lot. But just listening to your inner intuition, giving yourself the space to really pay attention to what it is that you're going through, and then thinking about how can I apply this where I'm happy, making a difference, making money because we gotta live. And hopefully making a future for yourself. But all that to say, you have three businesses while being a mom to a little boy and a dog mom to two pups and a wife. And it's a lot of things. So how do you take care of yourself and try to live mindfully while having a very busy and robust life?
So I'm very intentional about my time off and my time with my family, and that is my time with my family, right? So that means no phone. That means don't check your email, don't no social media, anything like that. But the reality is that some days are really busy, and I can't help it, right? So those days that are really busy, I'm very big on looking at my calendar and preparing my mindset for that day, right? And even today, I was just right before this, we're saying, I was like, it's such a busy day because I took off a couple of days and enjoyed some time away with just my husband. And I was thinking about this day this morning. And sometimes you're like, the only alone time and time that I'm going to get is this time where I'm in the shower. And sometimes, and I'm like, I'm not going to think of anything else. I'm just going to enjoy taking a
Taking a
shower,
shower.
right? And sometimes it's just the drive home, right? Don't think about work. Put on some music. Don't talk to anybody. But it's just being very intentional, even about the days that are super busy, because there will be days that are super busy. But then planning for time off. Like, I already know my next time off. I will be off in June for an entire week. Where we rented a house so I could be with my family and my friends, and I plan for it, right? And also, there are going to be some times that, like when we started the business, that I prepared myself to say the next 3 months are going to be very busy, but it's going to be a payoff, right? Because I'm setting up my business so that it runs smoothly, so that I don't have to worry about these little things later, and that's going to be the payoff, right? But sometimes it's just one thing a day that's just going to give you some peace and you're not stressing about something or thinking about the next thing.
Yeah, so we heard a lot of intentionality with what you're doing and how you spend your time. But in addition to that, and this is something especially to my working moms and busy moms that I try for them to really embrace, is the aspect that it doesn't need to look a certain way. A day in a
No.
spa would be lovely, but we don't all have sometimes, 10 hours to give away like that. So even if it's on the drive home or sitting in the car or in the shower, just making the most out of those small mindful moments so that you can function as the best person you could be, so you could be the best mom, professional, or whatever it is that you do with your time. So I really appreciate you bringing light to that.
Yeah, definitely.
So, with all of that, Kathy, if you could be remembered for one thing in this world, what would it be?
I could be, that's such a good
I know it's deep.
question. Yes, very deep. If I could be remembered for one thing, it would be that I was the type of person that made you feel like you can do anything.
I love it.
That would
I
be
love
me.
it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yes. And you do that so much, not only I'm sure with your clients, I'm assuming with your clients, but
Yeah.
also with your clinicians through the collective and everything you do. So I thank you for sharing your story, for getting real with us, for letting us, educating us on EMDR and really how this is just a little glimpse of the business side. There's so much behind it. And often people are like, oh, you have your own business. That's really nice. But they don't see all of the things in the background that it takes in order to get here. And that's something that if you are a therapist listening in and you're interested in opening up your own business or going from solo to group, definitely reach out to Kathy. So, Kathy, where can people find you?
So, for my group, you could find me at herocenternj.com. For my consultations, it's heroconsultations.com. And then for the collective, it's LatinxPracticeCollective.com. And we're also on Instagram and LinkedIn.
I love it. So thank you so much for being here. Any last words?
No, that's it. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. See you
And
soon. Wasn't that amazing? I thank Kathy so much for sharing not only space with us, but also her story and just being, like I said, so real with it. I hope that you got a little bit of a glimpse into what becoming a mental health therapist looks like. And the story is slightly different for all of us, but one thing is for sure, they're all very long stories of the effort and everything that it takes into being who we are and being good at what we do. For today's guided meditation, I really want you to think about what is an area that you sometimes want to give up on. When is a time that you feel like things are hard? Doesn't have to be in becoming something or getting your career. It can be in a relationship. It can be raising a child. It can be training a dog. Whatever it is, think about what is it that makes that situation challenging, but how can you continue to persevere? How can you keep going? And know that it doesn't have to be by yourself. Just as was shared with us, there is support that you can find, but it's about being intentional on finding it so that you can use it for your benefit and being intentional with the days and the space and time that you have, not only to be on as a person, but also to take care of yourself. My friends, thank you so much for tuning in to the mental health series of the Free to Be Mindful podcast. And as always, in a world where you are free to be anything that you want to be, you are always free to be mindful. Catch you next week.